Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And I'm really enjoying this segment. Our listeners have really gave a lot of great feedback about the Dav and Joseph show. So we're going to continue to have this conversation. So I'm excited to welcome the program. All NFL All-Pro, St. Louis Ram, Davin's Dream Team, Davin Joseph. Davin, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. And I guess how many days till training camp? Are you counting down, or are you just still enjoying the time off?
I'm enjoying it. I'm going to milk it until it's time to get back to reality, and that is training camp. And so hopefully, you know, you always pray for a smooth, lax training camp. But then on the back end, you always know, like, you know, you got to work hard because you want to do well during the season. So it's finding that fine line between working enough to get the job done, you know, to a high level, but with having a little bit of fun. Hopefully the rain cancels a couple practices or coach breaks you and he decides that he, you know, we could take it light. So. You always wish for days, pray for days like that. By the end of the day, you want to feel like you're working hard enough to be, you know, in great position for game one.
Well, and that's so true, Davin. It's a situation where you know how much work is going to be involved that entire NFL season, and everyone needs a break. As we are talking about kids, and now they're starting summer, and a lot of them are going to have that summer break. Will you have that same break in almost the same amount of time? Not so much time where you lose your skills and you're back playing again. But again, there's so many things involved. But Davin, on a daily basis, to maintain the size that you have, the strength, the conditioning, what goes into your training regimen every day, Davin?
You know, usually it's always about, you know, nutrition. Nutrition is like your number one thing, about getting enough protein. People hear that a lot, but also getting enough carbs. I think some people try to discount carbs because, you know, people would like to associate carbs with bad carbs or carbs with weight gain, or, you know, people always want to cut carbs out to lose weight, look better, but you need it for energy. And so it's just maintain a balanced diet. Lately I've been staying away from the fried foods, probably going on a nice little streak now, like a year and a half with no fried food besides chips.
Wow.
I don't think I'll give those up. I try to, you know, definitely stick with nutrition, hydration, especially with working out. Of course, I try to work out in the morning. Usually better for me because it's not as hot in Florida. Morning workouts, always lifting is always a part of it. Conditioning and also agility. And I think people do understand, but they might not understand how much change of direction explosion goes into playing, especially O-line.
Right.
A lot of stability, a lot of strength work, and it's turning into like a year-round gig where you really can't take too much time off. You have to always stay in somewhat good shape. And so with the NFL being so competitive, being on top of your game at all times is kind of the new standard.
And so you were saying about the explosion, the speed, the being able to do that. So tell me specifically, when you get to the gym, you lift weights, but you also do cardio. But what, like the workouts, does it vary every day, or is it almost pretty consistent in what you do, except just take turns on specific body parts you work out?
Usually it's always either upper body lift or lower body lift. Always having some kind of an explosion type exercise. So really looking at something similar to Olympic lifts. So most people are familiar with power cleans or power snatches, clean pulls, things of that sort. That's always about, you know, generating explosion, staying explosive, staying quick, staying powerful. But when it comes to the field work, it's all about change of direction, being able to get in and out of cuts, being able to plant off one foot, change direction, explode, accelerate, decelerate, all those different things. Just being able to, especially for O-line, being able to stay in front of somebody. And so that's a major part of the work that I do. Conditioning-wise, it always changes. long distance running is definitely not my thing at all. But those days I suffer, and I got to do it. You got to be able to run a mile plus within a good time. You got to be able to do things long distance, whether it's long distance shuttles, whether it's long distance running on a track, even if it's on the treadmill. But the majority of the conditioning work I do is a circuit condition, similar to like a metabolic workout. I know it's popular now. Geez, I'm drawing a blank. CrossFit, similar to CrossFit without, but it's more football related.
Right. And I think that the important part of the conditioning is, say, like the mile run and different things, is so that you can make it to the fourth quarter, especially if you're playing in a very cold climate or warm climate. By that fourth quarter, you get pretty worn down, and conditioning's key to keep going, to keep making sure you open those holes up for those running backs and protect the quarterback, especially in the fourth quarter when everyone is getting tired.
Exactly. Trying to maintain that conditioning, want to be able to play just as good in the fourth quarter as you did in the first quarter. You know, the whole concept of starting fast and finishing strong. And that's all on conditioning, but it takes a while to get to that conditioning level. It's also the conditioning with taking the hits, being able to hit for, 70-plus plays without getting fatigued. And that's not, necessarily running or lifting type of conditioning, but you're conditioning your body to be able to take that challenge. And so that's what we'll get into in the training camp, is really conditioning the body to be able to take the pounding and be able to bounce back the next day.
So, Dev, when we talk about young offensive linemen, especially high school offensive linemen, and especially when they're now starting to put on some weight, because, their weight limits when you're talking eighth grade, seventh grade, and then you get to high school, those change. How to make sure that the kids don't put up so much weight that, they injure themselves, knee injuries, ankle injuries, lower body injuries, or certain injuries because of lack of conditioning, because they're not a professional athlete like yourself that's constantly training. They have a lot more school to go to. They might have the opportunity to have the professional equipment that you're able to work out. What recommendations would you give those young offensive linemen, especially in high school, what weight you think they should maintain, especially, and what types of things do they do so that they don't get injured? Because again, when you're younger, those joints and the knees and the ankles go sometimes, are a lot easier injuries happen than later on when you're in the right condition and condition your body so that you can maintain and not get injured as much.
Yeah, and really it's a fine line, because a lot of guys high school we see don't have those resources to be able to eat a balanced diet, or don't have some of the resources as far as a nutritionist or somebody to really give them sound advice when it comes to eating right and how much to eat, what the portion size and how to gain weight, what's good supplements, what's bad supplements. And so in general, I think that if I was to give advice to high school students, it's definitely to keep it simple. Sometimes we can all get mesmerized by labels, right? We see a nice new product and they're advertising that they're X, Y, and Z, and somebody may promote it, or we may like that person. But at the end of the day, we got to keep it simple. We can't keep on jumping to the next best thing. Sometimes just keeping it simple is best. Weight gain in high school, your body's going to tell you really what you can and can't do. So if you feel like you're forcing yourself to gain too much weight, it's probably not a great idea. Right. I know that as athletes, we love to push the envelope. We love to be bigger, faster, stronger all the time. And sometimes it's hard to get that bigger. But I don't want to discourage anybody from gaining weight, but I definitely want to encourage them to be smart about gaining weight. Sometimes when you gain weight rapidly, knees, like you were talking about earlier, knees, ankles, and you're not necessarily strong enough to hold the weight and still move efficiently.
Right.
And sometimes even you see O-linemen now where we got to a time where O-linemen was almost like bigger, better, taller and bigger guys. And now you see a lot of guys really getting into really, really good shape, you know, getting down to the, you know, 6'4", 300-pound guys, but they move great. They
right.
move great. They're efficient when they move. And you don't see as many just big, big guys out there that can't really move. And so I really think that's kind of that the where football is going now with linemen that are really in shape, guys that are a little, you know, trimmer and look more like defensive linemen rather than a traditional offensive lineman. So, but getting back to that about the high school kids, I think it's just better to keep things simple. So that's protein and carbs. Work out as much as possible. And when it comes to eating good, it's quality over quantity.
Okay.
And I think with those guidelines, you're pretty much going to say that you'll stay pretty much safe.
And then the injury problems, if you, especially for O linemen, what types of injuries can you kind of avoid as an offensive lineman that, you know, it's based on, you know, overtraining in the gym or, you know, or specifically weighing too much for the speed that they have, specific things. What things have you seen in your career to keep from maintaining and not being injured as much? Because if you're injured, you're not playing on the field. That's for sure.
Of course. And it's always technique. And it's always being a good technique. And we always have this thing on offensive linemen that to keep your feet moving.
Yeah,
and that's always the key to keep your feet moving because there's always something in your leg. And so for offensive linemen, running back, tackled in your leg, lineman falling into your other lineman falling into your leg, so a defensive lineman, old lineman, it's just always stuff around your legs. And so the tradition is to keep your feet moving. And it's always that if you're flat footed and you plant it, it's, you know, more likely that you'll get hurt. And so that's like rule 101. But also it's just about conditioning because when you're tired,
yes,
you're not as reactive as you should be. You're not as aware as you should be. And I think that plays a big part of why you see some guys get hurt is because they're just not aware of their surroundings. So they don't feel they're not moving fluently or quick enough. And that all plays into fatigue and conditioning also.
So we're listening to the Davin Joseph segment on the Total Celebrity Show. And again, I'm Neil Haley interviewing Davin Joseph about, some of the tips for his training regimen and also for high school students to make sure current linemen in high school to use technique, find the right coaches they're going to teach the right technique, and maintain the weight for the best weight for what you know your body's going to be able to handle. And it's interesting you talk about always staying in a good position, balance, and all that stuff. So key, because offensive linemen have to stay low all the time. They have to stay down. They have to be the one that has the power, but they have to be lower than that defensive lineman. And sometimes, and that's sometimes a linebacker. And you guys, if you're very tall, that's, you got to get down low. I remember trying to play football, being as tall as I was, and I said, "Oh, I'm sticking to basketball," because they put me in as an offensive lineman. If I had good hands, I could have been a great tight end, but forget that. And I had to stay down low, and it was just too hard. Just about how many, you don't have tons of 6'9", 6'10 offensive linemen. There's some, I guess, 6'7", 6'8", yeah. But when you're getting to that height, you got to hopefully think about the defensive end or tight end. So, Davin, what's new coming up with you now? You were talking a couple weeks ago about some big things coming up. What's coming up with Davin Joseph?
Man, what is coming up? I tell you, it's almost like it's too many things coming up. Foundation-wise, we're having three physicals coming up mid-July, looking like the July 11th, down in South Florida, where we're trying to get free physicals to local high school athletes. And also some Pee Wee athletes also. Trying to do the same thing up in Tampa, partnering with D1 Sports. I believe our date is July 25th. Don't quote me on that one.
Okay.
And we're doing the same kind of gig where we're giving free physicals, trying to also put an educational piece in there about nutrition, about heat exhaustion, about heat stroke. Some of the topics we talked about today about, you know, weight gain, working out, workout regimens. We're talking about all kinds of different topics, of course, concussions, and trying to get the parents just as educated as the kids when it comes to awareness. I think parents are going to play a big role in, of course, their child's well-being. Still want to educate them also while giving the free physicals. Excited about that event there. We're actually working on the give back to get ready for school coming up probably mid, late August with Samaritan Street.
Okay.
And we're still working on those details to make it happen. But, of course, I'll definitely pass that information on to you, and I'll let everybody know how that's shaping out. But, you know, just preparing for the football season, getting the body ready, getting the mind ready, getting the foundation ready, and, of course, trying to enjoy the summer with the kids. They're off from school now. And so we will be, you know, we'll be active locally this year. No big vacation. They just kind of want to stay a little low-key this summer. So I think that would be great for us to kind of do some local things around Orlando, Tampa.
There's always good things. It's like you're on vacation 12 months a year living in Orlando and Tampa, trust me, with all the awesome things, especially the time of year, the weather. So enjoy that weather, Davin, always, because, I mean, can you believe Pittsburgh? We're in June, and June 1st we woke up and it was like 45 degrees. I'm like, what is going on here? That's terrible. And then, like, May felt
that,
like...
That's not very good.
No, it's not. It's not. So, well, we'll see what your weather is like once you head to St. Louis. But I'm excited about the team this year. And I'm going to be rooting for... Because my teams are in the AFC, so I'll be rooting for the St. Louis Rams because of my good friend, Davin Joseph, and seeing you guys go all the way. I just told a couple... I'm tutoring an SAT prep class right now for top Western PA kids that can't afford SATs for football, and some of them are 4 and 5 stars, and I was telling them, I said, the St. Louis Rams are going to go to the Super Bowl. They laughed at me. I said, watch what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm going to go after that. Davin, you don't have to say anything, but I'm rooting for you guys, because I know you guys played the teams, and you have the best team in your division that went to the Super Bowl, and you guys played them tough, and you beat them once, too, if I'm correct. So I think that really you guys have a good shot. So it's always this process. We're already seeing this change of the guard always in the NFL. Never the top teams never stay on top forever, for sure. So I know that you're excited about the training camp and where you guys go next.
Exactly. So it should be interesting. And so I think you know, that's the thing. That's the great thing about the league, is that it's very hard to predict the top half. You know, it's very hard to predict the top half. And I think you really look at some teams like New England that can stay consistently towards the top. But even their Super Bowl, I think the time between this Super Bowl championship and the last Super Bowl championship, I believe was years.
And yeah.
So how competitive the league is, and getting to the big prize, and so. It's hard. It's hard for teams to stay on top, and it's always room for somebody to come up to sneak in the top and do some damage.
And that's how it works in the NFL, for sure. So, best place to find info on you, Davin, where can we go?
Oh, still davinstreamteam.org.
All right, well, Davin, best of luck to you, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, and you'll get some more updates for me, and I'll come up with another interesting topic. I really like talking about the whole situation with training regimen. I'm sure you definitely educated people that did not know all that it took for an offensive lineman conditioning-wise. So thanks again for calling, Davin. All right, take care.
All right, now.
See ya. Okay, you too. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show. Again, if you say, well, why is he wearing the same suit and tie? Well, it's just because I have decided to do 6 hours of television taping, I mean, 3 hours of television taping, 6 episodes. So you got to go to my website, TollTutor.net, Twitter, TollTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, to interact with all the different social media, the fun things I do. I'm going to tweet out after this 3 hours. Wow. Just to kind of tell you, because again, people that are listening to the radio program, because they get to get this simulcast, it's a fantastic thing. But for my Pittsburgh audience, this is a team that we have learned to love to hate because the Pirates are winning now. So I'm excited to welcome the program, and I love partnering again with Triumph Books, author of If These Walls Could Talk, St. Louis Cardinals Stories from the St. Louis Cardinals Dugout and Locker Room, Stan McNeil. Stan, thanks for calling, and I guess I'm not going to disappoint our Pirate fans out there, but they got to learn what it makes to be a successful franchise like the St. Louis Cardinals, for sure. You guys are really winners in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, and I think the Pirates have been paying attention or have been going about it their own way here lately, but it looks like their window for success is wide open and has no sign of closing, really.
It definitely has no sign of closing because I think finally baseball's figured out that, you know, all high-paid salaries – that if you find people that are motivated and find them at their peak of their career, at the time when they're really generating, that you can win with, building your own system, not buying players. And St. Louis has really used a lot of times the homegrown players for success, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, and I think, at least in the case of the Cardinals, and I get the same sense with the Pirates, it's, while talent still is far and away number one, the Cardinals also, they really consider makeup, character, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they have a team that of guys that come in, and they all seem to be very good citizens, all very hard workers, all very dedicated to their craft. And it just kind of, that kind of, success begets success. And I think in the same way, this chemistry kind of just trickles down and filters on from year to year. And so not only do you have good baseball players, you have very good teammates. And I think whenever you're in a season that is 6 months with 162 games, right, and very few days off, that's very important to have that kind of chemistry.
Do you think the family atmosphere of the Cardinals, it's just how the franchise has been? What do you think has led that opportunity? You don't hear lots of horrible stories about the Cardinals, like some baseball teams and times, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that tradition plays a part in it, and I think in recent years, there's no doubt that the team is just really kind of focused on bringing in good guys, if you will. And I think it also starts at the top, like a lot of things. In the case of the Cardinals, you look at their best players, Adam Wainwright, Yadier Molina, right, and Matt Holliday, and these are kind of their hardest workers, you know, back to the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan. You know, when your best player is your hardest worker, it's hard for the other guys to slack off.
Definitely, and I'm sure you just mentioned three players. The Pirates fans are like, their ears are burning right now. Hear about these guys for sure. But you're right, the Cardinals are not people that we're seeing in the news about, you know, over social media wise or just really controversial kind of players. And I think it goes to the skipper of the team, whoever has been the manager of some of these successful Cardinal teams.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Mussini was a guy who had absolutely no managerial experience beyond coaching his four boys in youth league when he took over for Tony La Russa after the 2011 season. And the Cardinals front office and brain trust made it clear that, okay, we know he has no experience, but we value his leadership quality so much that we can kind of develop him as a manager. But his leadership qualities were something they saw that really couldn't be developed and were already established. And, you know, you look now for, you know, this is his fourth season, And it was, you know, a great call on the part of their brain trust, because he's been exactly what they thought he would be.
Definitely. He's amazing in so many ways. And I think that working under Tony La Russa helped him a lot. I'm sure he was a great student of the game, learning how amazing of a manager Tony La Russa was.
Well, you know, he was Matheny mainly caught. He caught for, I think it was 4 years during La Russa's reign in the early 2000s here in St. Louis. And, you know, at one point towards the end of that, Tony La Russa said, this is the guy who definitely will be a manager someday. I mean, he saw those qualities in Mike. And Mike absolutely learned a lot from Tony La Russa. But Mike will tell you that he learns from everybody. You know, I mean, Red Shandies is 92 years old and is still around this club pretty much every day when it's home. And Mike talks to Red regularly, you know. And, I mean, and he says that's more than just a courtesy conversation. He learns, you know. He learns stuff from Red. And you get this even from the Cardinals coaches, that it's that kind of relationship. Mike kind of wants the input from the other coaches, that he welcomes that. And they all kind of just learn together, you know. I mean, it may sound like a cliche, but in many ways it seems like one big happy family.
And I think that's important. And I think that when you have successful teams win championships or come close to winning championships, you look at We Are Family, Pittsburgh Pirates. You look at the Reds at the time with Ken Griffey Sr. and that group. You see these teams that they got along together. You look at the amazing Mets of 1986, they kind of got along, but they were a cast of characters that fell apart right after that season. They weren't a team that could continue to win it. And this generation of baseball, to keep seeing the Cardinals winning when they lose some of their top players to major other teams for big contracts, even though they have a better payroll, they can spend a little more money than the Pirates, a lot more, really. But it's very amazing. And your book is not just highlighting the Cardinals now. You're looking back years from the whole St. Louis Cardinals history, right? This book?
We take, the book mainly focuses on what I consider the best era, or arguably the best era in the Cardinals history. I mean, they've gone to the National League Championship 4 straight years now, won the World Series in that time. And, you know, and to me, that's kind of the most recent, or at least the golden era. So the book focuses on that. But we certainly, you know, I certainly have stories in there about Stan Usual, you know, the greatest Cardinal ever. When he passed away, this town, I mean, it was like royalty had passed. And the Cardinals had a lot to do with, you know, how he was kind of seen, you know, how he was buried, really. I mean, it was kind of a week-long event here, and it just spoke to not only how the Cardinals treat, you know, someone like Stan Usual, but also the respect and the interest that that St. Louis, the city, had in Stan, who was, you know, a guy who stayed here from the time he joined the team in the 1940s, and was a guy that used to carry autographed baseballs and baseball cards in his trunk, and would go home. You know, if he would stop somewhere and he saw a bunch of kids or whatever, or someone came up to him, he would just reach into his trunk and give him an autograph. And that, in a way, has come to kind of embody what many folks outside of St. Louis might derive, but is the so-called Cardinal way.
Now, so tell me, when you were asked to write this book, Stan, what is your background with the Cardinals? Tell us specifically, have you covered them, or kind of give us that background of you? Because we have two segments, so it's a nice time to talk about, and we can talk about your favorite memories of the Cardinals and things like that. But you focused and you highlighted mostly the years that really they have been glorious. But tell us your background with the Cardinals.
Yeah, well, my background is not that extensive compared to a lot of people. I moved to St. Louis in 2000. When I took a job with the Sporting News to be their managing editor for baseball coverage.
Okay.
So at that time, I started hanging around the Cardinals quite a bit, and that job eventually evolved into kind of their national baseball writer, which, being based in St. Louis, put me at Busch Stadium, you know, a lot of the baseball season. And then in 2013, I was laid off by the Sporting News and started working for Fox Sports Midwest, the network that televises Cardinal games, mainly writing for their website. So in 2013 and 2014, you know, I was at most of their games, really got to know the players on the team now, as well as the players who, you know, kind of come back. And then just recently, I started a job as a staff writer for the Cardinals publication. Now I'm an actual employee of the St. Louis Cardinals.
How about that?
For someone who was named after Stan Musial and has the bat to prove it, it seems like, well, maybe this is where I was meant to be, you know. And when I say that I have a bat, I'll just tell you the quick story, which is in the book. But after we moved here in 2000, my wife at the time was having lunch with her boss, who knew Stan Musial.
Oh, wow.
He introduced my wife then to Stan, and she says, "Hey, my husband's named after you." And Stan goes, "Really? Well, anybody who's named after me gets a bat." You know, and she said, "Okay, sure." But he, you know, had someone take down her address. And
how about that?
2 weeks later, sure enough, here's a beautiful signed autographed bat from Stan Musial that shows up in the FedEx truck. And to this day, I've got it framed in my office at home.
How about that? And a tremendous story. And I think I want to jump into specifically enough what makes the Cardinals so successful in the next segment. Looking at the minor leagues and how their minor league system builds such great players. One of the people, directors in the minor leagues, that played for the Chicago Cubs I've interviewed, and it'll come to me in a second. I tell you, I interview so many people, Stan, and you'll probably mention the person that he played for the Cubs for years, and he was, and then he ended up going to the Cardinals, and he's involved in the minor league system, the whole running the entire minor league system. And he talks about how important that process is. And it's quite interesting to see how you build a team. And I think that after people saw, how can we compete with the Yankees? How can we compete with teams that payrolls that are so enormous, ginormous, like the Dodgers? It's through your minor leagues. It looks at the Oakland Athletics and their success at one point in time, and the Minnesota Twins. When did the Cardinals finally see, with the way baseball changed, how they have to build and develop their own players? And so when we get back, you're going to definitely let us know more about that. You're watching the Neil Haley Show, and we get back more with Stan McNeil, learning more about how the Cardinals are successful. And I hope the Pirates are listening locally right now, because I want to see a World Series ring in my future with the Pirates and see them win. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley Show, and we're the author from Triumph Books, If These Walls Could Talk, St. Louis Cardinals, Stan McNeil. Stan, amazing story how you ended up in St. Louis. I find that fascinating. And were you covering sports for another organization before the Sporting News until you got to St. Louis?
Actually, I was a sports editor at the San Diego Union-Tribune, the newspaper in San Diego. I've been there for about 15 years, so definitely close to sports pretty much my entire life. But as a sports editor, you know, you're not just focusing solely on baseball, but on everything. But
right.
When I moved to the Sporting News, then baseball became, you know, pretty much the full-time gig at that point.
So you were covering the Chargers, you were covering, I don't know how much I'm dating back, I don't know if it was the Clippers as well, but you were covering the Chargers and you were covering the Padres in San Diego, and beautiful city San Diego is. Was your wife happy she was going to St. Louis after she's been so many years in San Diego? I'm telling you, I visited San Diego for like just a weekend. La Jolla where I was at a training for Darren Hardy. And I'm telling you, San Diego is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. Truly, it is.
Hey, I've been here for 15 years and I still miss San Diego. You're absolutely right. It's not only a beautiful place for a big city, it is also a very easy place to live. You know, I mean, it was the price of real estate is, I would not say easy to deal with, but, you know, just getting around the city. I mean, you can go from the coast to the mountains and
yes,
like an hour's drive. I mean, it's absolutely a beautiful city. And it's also a very kind of out, you know, there's a lot of focus on outdoors. There's a lot of great Olympic athletes, Olympic type sports athletes who based in San Diego, who the paper, at least when I was there, covered quite well. So, you know, we did a lot with Olympic right. sports as well as with the Padres and the Chargers.
Awesome, because, I mean, thinking about just the amazement of San Diego, and the Chargers moving to L.A. would be sad, really. It's just a tremendous franchise, the Chargers, and stories
yeah.
thinking of Dan Fouts and all those different things. I'm surprised you've not written a book on the Chargers yet. I'm sure it will come down the line if I'm wrong. I mean, I don't know for sure how many books you've authored, Stan, but that's one that definitely you would have a lot of experience from covering the Chargers. Let's go back to the Cardinals, which I'm and talk about specifically. I brought up the whole thing about the minor league system with the Cardinals and how that really has built the success of a lot of homegrown players. Would you agree with my statement?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's who they draft as, and also how these players are developed. I mean, you look at, I think, kind of the pinnacle of their draft success, at least right now, you look at the 2009 draft, and they had at one point five or six players on their team last year from that draft. I mean, and not just any
wow.
players, but some of their key players, and that's just unheard of, because there have been drafts
yeah,
where there's not
okay.
five or six players in the entire major league, you know, who came out of a draft. But no, they got just quickly Shelby Miller and Joe Kelly were the, I think, the first two picks mm-hmm. in that draft, and they came here, and both have been traded in the past season. But their closer Trevor Rosenthal, their first baseman Matt Adams, and then their third baseman
oh.
Matt Carpenter. All came
Amazing.
Out of the 2009 draft. Yeah, so that I think right there speaks to how important the draft can be and the attention that the Cardinals have put on it. That was, they really kind of refocused on the draft, or started really focusing again on the draft around 2006, 2007. Bill DeWitt was just, the owner was just kind of saying, hey, we cannot keep up with the other teams just based on free agent signings. We have to put more on the draft. They kind of went at that time, they went more to an analytical approach,
right.
the sabermetric approach. And this is a team that kind of blends the old school with the sabermetric as
exactly.
well as anyone.
Yeah.
But that at that time, they kind of that's when they kind of turned their attention to that. And 2009, they kind of hit the jackpot with it.
And it's helped that team. And because, again, they don't have to give the big contracts yet in a couple years. But they keep developing great players. Why do you think that is? And I remember now who I interviewed was Derek May. And Derek May, former Chicago Cub that got all his rings from the Cardinals. And he's involved in the minor league system. I think he heads the minor leagues system in so many ways as a coach. The process of how they made good draft picks, do you think it's luck or do you think it's the system that St. Louis has created?
There's definitely some luck involved. When you look at Kevin Seagrass, the left-handed reliever they have, he was a 41st round draft pick. So
right.
to think that he's going to come up and, you know, he came up in 2013 and gave up two runs in like 39 or 40 innings.
Right.
I mean, no one had any idea he was going to be that good, or he wouldn't have lasted to the 41st round. So there's definitely an element of luck involved. But the one thing the Cardinals do in developing their players is that the message is the same from the time they're drafted through every step of the system. You know, it sounds simple, and I think other teams try to do this, but
right.
the Cardinals are able to do it. And I think one way that I've seen they're able to do it is that they'll have their minor league coaches all with, you know, kind of with the major league teams for a couple of weeks in spring training. And I think from that, the minor league coaches can kind of see how things are done, how players are taught, just the drills they go through. And so that kind of then spills over to the season. And that will also bring up a minor league coach at times during the season just to kind of make a road trip with the team, or to kind of hang around the team. It might be kind of a reward for a coach who's done well, it might be something they want to see if this particular coach is ready for a promotion, or maybe the other, maybe they think that he's not cut out to be with the club, not a good fit with the club. But I think to me that is something that definitely kind of would speak to the success they've had with developing players.
And the city of St. Louis, you have the St. Louis Rams, but this is a Cardinals town, isn't it?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, the way I usually explain that to people is they'll have, well, the Brewers were here during the first homestand. You're talking about a mid-April game when school is still in, the weather's not great, and there's 40,000 people coming through Busch Stadium. You know, I mean, that just doesn't happen very many places, especially in a city that's not, you know, this is not New York or L.A.
Right.
I mean, it's
exactly.
not that kind of... There's not that many people to draw from, but no, the Cardinals have had at least 40,000 for every home game going back to 2013. So, you know, when you and that, they're also a team that bases a lot of their revenue on ticket sales. So it kind of goes hand in hand. The team is good, and the people keep buying tickets, so the team can kind of put that money back into the team.
That's so important. And when you were asked to write this book, how cool was it, especially now promoting it and having the opportunity, again, it's going to be available in paperback May 1st. I just spotted this on situation. How did this come to being in a way where you're asked to write this book, now going and promoting it and getting to talk to so many tremendous St. Louis Cardinal fans? It must be fun reminiscing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, this was my first book, you know, and Triumph called me. I think someone in the area had given them my name, and they called me and asked if I was interested. And I, since I had been close to the team for a while, following the team closely for a while, I said, sure, I'll give it a shot. And, you know, worked on it through all of last season, was able to talk to, you know, not only the players on that team, but often, as do most teams, the Cardinals will have alumni in for homestands, for promotions, or whatever. So I was able to have a lot of great conversations with former Cardinals as well as present Cardinals.
And and getting to interview them in ways and see the different things, and now being with the St. Louis Cardinals organization. And I guess writing a book about a winner is a good thing too, right? It's easy to kind of go and say, hey, you want to get the book, check out my book when you're all over the St. Louis area because, hey, everyone loves the Cardinals.
Yeah, you know, and as a reporter, you don't, you know, you're really objective. You know, I grew up a Baltimore Orioles fan, but long ago became a fan of good stories, you know, and of fast games and that kind of thing. But while we don't root for teams, it certainly makes the job more enjoyable when you're covering a team that's winning. And, you know, anyone who tells you differently is not being honest with you, because there's no doubt that being around a team that's winning is a lot more fun than having to go into a clubhouse day after day with a team that's in last place.
Definitely, and it is a lot of fun. And you were talking about the Baltimore Orioles. I interviewed the 100 Things Orioles author a couple segments ago, so I'm sure you love when you get the chance to go to Camden Yards. What a beautiful ballpark that is.
And I'll be buying that book, I can guarantee you. I mean, like I say, I'm not so much an Orioles fan anymore, but I'm sure that there's a lot of history
about
the Orioles there.
And a lot of memories,
yeah. You know,
Dan Conley wrote it for Triumph, and a great guy as well. I love talking to Triumph book authors because you guys really want to get out there and talk about something that's passionate. And writing your first book, you see how much this is like another child for you or something. It's just this awesome thing to be able to go and promote something like this. Wouldn't you agree? It's like once it was out, and finally get to see it and look at the pages and say, my work and all the research I did finally came to pass with the book.
It's a great experience. There's no doubt about it, you know, and it does feel like an accomplishment. I mean, even if it doesn't really sell a copy, it's like, hey, I've got that book now. You know, I'll always have that to put on my resume or to put in my office.
I think as good of a talker and how you really are very knowledgeable of the Cardinals, I have a feeling you'll have more books for the Cardinals in your career writing for Triumph. I think this is the first of many, I'm sure. And you have to kind of pitch them and say, did you know I covered the San Diego Chargers? Especially if the Chargers leave San Diego. What a book to write one on them. before that ends, the memories of the Chargers. Oh, I'm just thinking ideas, Dan. Keep you busy for sure.
Yeah, no. The Chargers, I'm like you. I really don't see the Chargers leaving San Diego. I mean, it's a team that hasn't ever won a Super Bowl, but there's still a great history of football, you know, of the Chargers there. I mean, you're talking about in the 80s when they had Dan South and those guys. I mean, that was a team that was just a joy to watch. You know,
Don Coryell. Groundbreaking. Well, you got to write the next 100 Things book if I'll find out if they did right run. But all right, Stan, where's the best place we can find information on you and purchase your book? Where can we go?
The best place right now is Amazon.com. You can pre-order it. Just kind of, if you don't even have to go to Amazon. If you just Google, "If These Walls Could Talk, St. Louis Cardinals," it will pop up there. It's going to be in Barnes & Noble pretty much, I hope, everywhere. I know here in St. Louis it will be here.
Oh, I'm sure it's in the front cover in Pittsburgh. I'm just kidding. You know,
they might kind of hide it behind the Pirates book there. But I think the best place right now is Amazon.com or, like I said, just Google "If These Walls Could Talk, St. Louis Cardinals."
Well, a good friend of mine, Dr. Michael Robinson, is going to definitely listen to this interview because he's a huge Cardinal fan, always bugs me and tweets me out when the Cardinals are beating the Pirates. So thanks for calling, Stan, and best of luck.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. That was the Neil Haley Show. Fantastic show, TotalTutor.net. And we'll talk next week with more great education and celebrity talk. Take care, everyone.
We're back to the Total Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook. LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google+, Neil Haley. And always very interesting to have interesting authors, entrepreneurs. I think everything in between, philanthropists. This is our guest. So I'm excited to welcome the program. New York Times bestselling author, was ranked by Forbes, ranked as the world's most powerful woman in 2011, 2012, Sherry Harrison. Sherry, how are you? And thanks for calling.
I'm good. How are you? Thank you.
Yeah, I'm doing fantastic. And it's quite interesting to look at your whole career as an entrepreneur and all these things and see all the amazing things you've done. Isn't it great to look back at times?
Thank you. Yes, it is. It's quite amazing. It's been a journey.
One of those kind of journeys for sure. Now, today our topic, we're going to talk about the doing good model and how it's been successful as for you as an entrepreneur. And a lot of times it's something that lots of entrepreneurs think it, you know, when they think business, they think numbers, they think specifically enough how I can get ahead is the best thing. And not looking at all the people around them, who their employees are going to be, who the people that they're going to interact as with their clients and all that. There's all these components to being successful in business, isn't it?
Yes, but I really believe that when you connect to values and the doing good model, activate your goodness in business is about value-based business. And I believe that when you concentrate on values, it always comes back, and it's a win-win. It comes back financially, and it's a win-win for society, for humanity, and the environment as a whole.
Well, definitely, I think, because, again, the situation is that you are transforming people's lives, from your employees to people that you work with to others that truly are in need. When you have success as an entrepreneur, that you really have to look at what value you're bringing to your position, correct? For sure.
Exactly. I think, you know, any business, if you're a small business, then, you know, it's your employees and your clients and the people in your area. We as a global business, the Harrison Group, we're in 40 different countries, 5 continents. We have 30,000 employees. So we have major impact in everywhere that we do business, through our employees, through our clients, through, you know, the different cities and different countries that we work in. We create influential impact. So why not make that impact positive for the future of humanity and future of the globe?
So how do we teach these value-based principles? Can you share some of them for us? Because I think what's so important about it is that you hear about value, giving value. I think that's always each one of the principles come out through as value, right? The value for others.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think in the book there's a lot of examples of how we do it as a company, as a group, both in business and philanthropy. We give information and examples from our group, but also from businesses outside our group, from employees that moved on to other businesses and took it forward, or other people that I admire, you know, different companies that I could see that they were also value-based. So there's many different examples. But I think the most important thing is that when you talk about values in a company or as a person, it shouldn't be a plaque on the wall. It should be something that's practical, something that's measurable. I think in business, you need to have measurable outcomes. And so we take these values and we engage the employees and get them to come up with creative ideas to how to implement these values and really see them happening, see the impact that it has.
And that impact is amazing when you talk about in the 40 years of business and with the Arison Group and how you've transformed people's lives, and you've seen specifically enough how it affects everything that you do on a daily basis to have that passion, right, Sherry? For sure.
Definitely. I mean, one value is volunteering, and we created Good Deeds Day, and we just had the 9th Good Deeds Day in March, and next year in 2016 is April 10th will be International Good Deeds Day. And from starting with a small idea that everyone can do a good deed, this past year there were 1 million people going out to do a good deed, 3 million hours of volunteering in 61 countries. It crossed all boundaries, all borders, all cultures, all ages in the school system. So it's quite amazing. You can take a value and implement it, and it just resonates outwards, and other people join in.
They definitely join in, and there's definite excitement. And then once you do good for others, it really leads to leadership. I've talked to lots of entrepreneurs that talk about service is one of the most important parts of their success. Once they're serving others and helping others, they feel that sense of doing good things. And I guess that's what that Good Deed Day is, people getting together to help a cause of people that are less fortunate, and in that process, build as a team, right? Correct?
Definitely. And I think in general, you know, when you're dealing with people and employees, people want purpose in life much more than anything else. And I think that when you have a higher purpose and you're passionate and you're united in that, the energy that's created is amazing.
And that's the energy that leads to every day and what you do, because then you get to deal with your fellow co-workers and that now have a different relationship with them, understanding who they are.
Yeah.
and kind of, you know, rolling the sleeves up and getting to work in another way and working together to, let's say, help build a home or fix something or, you know, donate something, that together that teamwork and that atmosphere come together. And I'm sure that you definitely discuss that in the book for sure, right?
Oh, in the book, yes, because in the book we show how we created these forums, representatives from all of the businesses, and I'm in finance and real estate, infrastructure, water, renewable energy, salt, that's on the business side, and on the philanthropic side, we have a private family foundation and a volunteer organization and a spiritual organization, and we've created forums that, you know, representatives from each one of the entities sit together to see how they can take these values, these high elated values, and turn them into something that's practical, something that's measurable, something that's on the ground that they can commit to. And what happens is these discussions turn into, you know, very open conversation, very positive conversation. It unites everyone, and it creates enormous creativity as well.
Definitely. That creativity is one of the big things that you were able to see, is the creative aspects of that team developing and as organization develops. And one thing we see a lot of times in business, which is a very frustrating thing, is a lot of people don't like going to work every day. They're frustrated about certain things that are happening in their lives, or they just don't see it as something as they're doing good. They seems like it's just, you know, working for the weekend type of thing. But to create a productive work environment where people are sharing and collaborating, how do you go about doing that? Because that's the other part of this doing good model, is that people have to be happy who they're working with each and every day. They have to understand that there has to be a great relationship between their supervisor and themselves, that they have to have some sort of collaboration process. How do you create that productive work environment?
Well, I'll tell you, the values in the Doing Good model has value, for instance, vitality or language and communication, for instance. So vitality, the employees bring up their ideas of what's vitality to them. It could be nutrition. It could be sport. It could be, having groups that run or after work activities or our employees, for instance, family was a major issue and going on family trips and having the kids involved as well. Language and communication. The forum is all about how we speak to one another, that the language is positive language, that it's, if we're talking in business and right away people are, oh, that can't be done, it's turned around to how can this be solved? How can we do this? And when you have open communication with your employees and the employees between them, where it's coming from the top that they have this, that it's okay to sit and be open and positive, it changes the whole environment in the workplace. And people feel connected. They feel part of something bigger than just the daily job.
And that's the important part of this, because if people are more at peace, they have they're more comfortable in their work environment, they're going to produce more. They're going to be more motivated to do a very good job for the team and the company because they feel valued. I mean, that's so important in anything you do. If you don't feel value, you don't feel motivated, really.
Exactly. And number one, they feel valued, but also it creates a workplace where everyone's a leader and everyone wants to pass it on because they're excited about it and because they're connected to it. And, and I've seen this happening. And we went from, years and years ago, a group where, this wasn't understood. And I think the one thing about values that's important is that you can't tell people to be value-based. You have to engage them. It's an educational process. It's a process of, getting people on board, getting them excited about it. So there's a lot of discussion involved. But it works. It's happening, and it's working. And there's lots of practical examples in the book.
And that's the important part. So that businesses that want to model this, and many people could see this, not just the big, large businesses, but small business owners, anyone that has some sort of organization can take a lot of your ideas and put it into place. Even it could be a situation like an athletic association or somebody like that, or a PTA. They could say, how can we make sure that these people work together to have success? Because a lot of times we see these small organizations, and guess what happens? There's lots of tension. There's not collaboration. People are not happy to see each other every day. Church organizations, all those places can model some of what you do with this Doing Good model and really see how that things can become better, and production and plus relationships build and you do good, which is the most important.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. Right.
Exactly. And I always say, this model is from the individual and in ever widening circles. So really everyone can get something out of it.
Now let's talk about some values of success. What you talked about it, when you talk about the value-based principles, but success, how do you define success? Because a lot of times, and I'm sure you define it in the book, a lot of people say it's the bottom line. Did my company make money? Am I ranked the best? Am I considered the person? But how do you value success?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll put that question in two, because for me it's personal as an individual and then also as a business. And as an individual, I think for me success is being more and more connected and precise within my inner self, my inner higher self. That's to me, on an individual basis, that's success. But for a business, you know, the question is always, how is this going to reflect the bottom line? How can you be value-based? How can you build sustainable and still make money? And this was a big question, especially in public companies. And the book shows, and we've proven that over the years, by implementing these visions and values, it has also benefited the bottom line and our financial situation. So we've made more money implementing values than before.
And you're seeing how doing good pays off, right? Right? Am I correct? That's the thing.
We say, doing good is good business. I think everyone wins in the end. The business, you know, business is out there to have financial returns, and we see that happening. And the individual, it's a win-win. I mean, the employee.